Today is Sunday, August 4th. I am in the home of Miss Doris Allen in Cleveland Heights. My name is Bethany Hollowell. Doris, would you mind stating your full name for the record?
Yes, it's Doris Maxine Allen.
Okay. Would you please begin by telling me where you were born and what year?
I was born in Shelby, Alabama, 1935, March the 11th, 1935.
And what was it like in Alabama at that time?
I have no idea. My parents migrated to Cleveland when I was 2 years old. And all I know is that I went back every summer for a 3-week vacation with my paternal grandfather, that I was young then, and, you know, I helped gather the eggs and milk the cows and ride the horses and that kind of thing, slop the pigs that in the summer. That was a part of my vacation to go back to his farm.
What did your parents come to Cleveland for?
Because my grandparents, my uncle, my great uncle, my grandmother's brother was the first one to migrate to Cleveland, and he was the first black man to own any property or business east of 55th. So it was the custom then for black people, once they began to do well, they would bring the rest of their family. So he bought his sister, who was my grandmother, her husband, and her children who were still in school here, and they lived in an apartment in one of the buildings he owned. And then as he amassed property, he bought the rest of the family here. So, you know, his mother and his niece, and then my parents, and that's how we got here.
Mm-hmm. What was your great-uncle's name?
Robert Hardy.
And what was his business that he...
Real estate. He built homes. He lived in Euclid, Ohio, and he built three houses there, and that's where he and his wife lived. They never had any children. So I used to go out there on weekends. His chauffeur would come and pick me up because I don't remember my uncle ever driving. I don't even know if he knew how to drive, but he always had really luxury cars and a chauffeur, and I would go and spend the weekends. I had a pet goat and a pet chicken. And then he raised chickens out because you could do that then. But it used to seem like forever when we were driving there. Even was Euclid, Ohio, it wasn't, the streets weren't paved like they are now. It was a long time. It was, you know, are we there yet? Was one of my favorite questions.
What did your grandparents do?
My grandfather worked for the railroad. And my grandmother was a homemaker.
And then what did your parents do when they first came to Cleveland? And then what were they doing when you lived in Shelby, Alabama, if you recall?
I have no idea. I was 2 when we came here, so I have no idea. My father, all I know is he eventually worked for the YMCA. So,
And when you first came to Cleveland from Shelby, though I know you're only 2 or 3, mm-hmm. Do you remember where you guys lived?
Yeah, we lived in an apartment building that my uncle owned on East 85th Street.
East 85th?
It's Cedar.
Okay.
It was 2155 Cedar. Or East 85th, pardon, off of Cedar.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what the house looked like?
It wasn't a huge apartment building. It was about, I think it was, it must have had about, probably about 24 suites in it.
And who were the other tenants in there? Did your other family members live there as well?
No, just the only people who lived in that apartment building was my grandmother and her family, my mother, and my father, and then his mother and an aunt, they lived in another apartment building. And I guess you would be like the custodians, you know, so, and you save your money. The whole idea was that each of his family members would save their money and purchase their own piece of property. That was, owning a piece of property was very important mm-hmm. to my family.
So while you were living on East 85th Street, pardon me, 85th, your parents were saving and working to buy mm-hmm. their own property. Where
yes,
were
and then my only thing I can remember is my father worked for the YMCA. I don't know when he worked there
okay.
or when my mother worked in private family.
Okay.
Yeah. Then when I was 9, my father went into service. He was drafted into the Navy. And then we went back down south and we stayed there for a year.
You went back down south.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you move?
Well, I guess because my mother wanted us to have a closer relationship with his family, because my father's family was all there, and because she could save more money, because we lived in a house that her father built when she was a child.
And so how old were you when you went back down to Alabama?
9.
Do you remember what it was like going back there, the difference between up north and then up down south?
There wasn't much difference for me. I know that we were treated differently because we were those kids from up north. So we didn't respond to white people the way that black people, they were accustomed to, and white people would always make excuses for us and say, oh, those are those kids from up north. So, nothing significant happened while we were there.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I had interviewed somebody who had also family roots down south, and he lived up north, and then when he visited when he was younger, he would talk to the white people, or down
mm-hmm,
south, and
mm-hmm.
all of his cousins were like, shocked that he was actually starting a conversation
mm-hmm.
and even approaching to say hi to a white person in the South at those times. So that's the way that they kind of...
Well, my grandfather, my father's father, was a very respected businessman. So I guess that's part of the reason that we weren't... Part of it was that we came from the North, and part of it was that they respected him.
What did he do?
Farming.
So, after 1 year, you moved back up to Cleveland. Did
mm-hmm.
you go back to 85th Street, or did you guys?
No, my parents bought their own house, and we lived in the Glenville area.
Where in Glenville did you guys?
On
live?
Earl Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
My sister still lives in the house.
What's the house like?
It's a big old house. 4 big bedrooms, a reception room, a living room, a dining room, a huge kitchen. So it was a very it was a big house.
Did they build the house?
No. The community was in transition then. It was basically a Jewish community, an Orthodox Jewish community. And I went to Glenville, and there were very few blacks in the school at that time.
So you were 10 or 11?
10, I was 10.
10
mm-hmm.
when you moved back.
Mm-hmm.
So you were in middle school?
I was in
elementary.
I was still in elementary school.
What
I think I was 5th grade. Miles Standish. It's now, I think it's Michael White now.
Do you have any fond memories from that school?
Yeah, I loved it. I do remember that the minute we came back and my mother enrolled us in the school, that because we came from we had been in a southern school, which was considered inferior, they tested us right away to see if I should be in the 5th grade, and we tested off the charts, so no problem there, but I do remember that.
Wow. Proved them wrong.
Yes.
You have siblings?
Yes. I'm the oldest of 5. I have 3 brothers and 1 sister.
And of them born in the South, or were you?
Only my brother next to me, who's 2 years younger than me. He was the only one born in the South. The others were born here.
Cleveland. What hospitals were they born in, if you remember?
I don't know. I have no idea.
So, Eddie Roach, you said you lived on.
No, Earl.
Earl, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. Earl. What were the kinds of things that you guys did as kids in Glenville? Parks or anything?
Well, yeah, we did. It's Rockefeller Park. It was a huge park. Of course, it's the cultural park. It has lots of cultural statues in it. We had picnics. We went on picnics on holidays. We rode the bus to Euclid Beach, or we usually took the bus wherever we were going as children. We took the bus to our church that was in that was on 89th and Cedar. So, but we just did the things, roller skating in at the roller skating rink, stuff like that.
Do you remember what rink you skated at?
It was called the Playmore then. Mm-hmm.
I'm familiar. What was that like at Playmore?
Oh, well, it was fun. You know, you learn how to dance on skates, how to dance to music, and that kind of stuff. And you met friends there, friends who weren't friends, but the same people every week, acquaintances who you had a relationship with because you saw them every week.
Mm-hmm. Where was Playmore located?
Oh, God, don't ask me. I don't even remember where it was located, but somewhere in the Cedar area. Let's see. We went to the movies, things like that.
Playmore has now moved to Euclid area.
No, I don't know where it is. I have no idea.
It's still around.
Okay, yeah. I'm surprised. I'm surprised.
Yeah, it's in Euclid now, I believe.
Yeah, well, we grew up roller skating now. My children don't know anything about roller skating, but they all ice skate.
Oh.
And so it's just what was available in the community.
Did you ever ice skate?
No, there were no rinks in the ghetto, in the black community. No skiing, no, nothing like that.
Sure. The reason I ask is because I know that, I want to say either Kingsbury Run or Luke, well, what would have been Woodland Hills,
mm-hmm.
which is Luke Easter Park.
Uh-huh.
I believe that they had a ice skating rink.
Oh, maybe so.
Okay.
But Luke Easter Park, they didn't even, that park didn't even come about until I was an adult. So.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then maybe you missed that part of it or
yeah.
something. So I'm very interested in your great uncle, who mm-hmm. was obviously an entrepreneur mm-hmm. in real estate. Could you tell me a little bit about him, what he was like?
Well, as I said, he was married. They never had any children, so they really doted on my sister and me. I think when I was 14, maybe, I worked in his office, real estate office. I collected rents, and I never forget, rents were $12.50 a week. And I would go on the bus. I would ride the bus from his office on 79th and Cedar to 85th to 86th to 83rd to all the apartment buildings and collect rents. And the money would be in a brown paper bag. Everybody knew what I was doing. Nobody ever. I had safe passage. The word on the street was nobody better touch her. So I would collect rents, and if there was a vacant property, then I would assess the property and see if it needed to be painted, what it needed, and that kind of thing. Write it down, and when I got back to the office, I would write all that stuff down so that he would have access to it, and the people would go in and do what they had to do to rent it to the next person. So, and I loved the job. I made a bundle of money. I made $25 a week, and that was after school. I only could work a couple hours after school. But boy, I was rich.
For a 14-year-old, that sounds
yeah.
Especially when people are paying
$12.50 for rent. Yeah, right. Yes. So.
Sounds like a great
And he lived in Euclid, Ohio. And he raised chickens. And on one of his properties, there was a poultry store, and he sold his chickens to that poultry store. Then when he decided he wasn't going to raise chickens anymore, he converted the chicken house into a little house for me with a living room, a bedroom, and a screened-in porch, no kitchen or anything. Because when I went out on the weekends, I could always take friends with me. My friends could go out with me. We call it was a country. So that was about it. We went out and played with the goat and the chicken. And
is his home still standing?
I don't know. I don't have any idea. He built three homes side by side. So I don't know if they're still there or not. I guess I just didn't have any desire to see if it was still standing.
Well, he was his great uncle, so he was probably older than your parents, obviously.
Did
he pass when you were?
Yes, he passed at a very. I think he passed when he was 52, and I can't remember what paper in some paper they wrote him up. It was in the summer. I think it was the summer of 50 that he passed. And I remember reading the obituary saying that he was the first black man to own any property or businesses east of 55th. But I think he was very young when he died.
Mm-hmm. His office was on 79th and Cedar, you said?
Mm-hmm.
What was the name of the office or the company?
I don't remember. I just remember it was in a frame house. And downstairs was one part, and upstairs was like where we kept books, where the receipts were written, and that kind of thing. And so, but I don't know if he had if there was a formal name. I'm sure there was. I just didn't know what it was.
And these tenants that you were collecting rent from, were mm-hmm. they mostly African American tenants? Mm-hmm,
or? Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, they were.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You said you took the bus to church.
Mm-hmm.
Which church did you attend?
Antioch. That's where I was baptized, and that's where I was married, in Antioch, on 89th and Cedar.
Mm-hmm. Are you still connected with the church?
Not in Antioch, no. Mm-mm. I go to church in Cleveland Heights.
Okay. So, going back to your home in Glenville, so you had four younger siblings, or five?
Four.
Four younger siblings, mm-hmm. And you said that the area was going through the transition.
Mm-hmm.
Could you comment on how you could tell that this transition was going on? Did you?
Yes, one of the ways I could tell is that the Jewish temples, some of the Jewish temples, were being purchased by black churches. So that's a good sign of transition, but that took some time before that happened. When we moved in the neighborhood, we had Jewish neighbors and across the street and on each side of us. And I remember going to school, and we would walk in the street. The thing that I remember that is that going to school in the morning, in the spring and the summer, the doors would be open. And you could hear the Jewish prayers, the men chanting the prayers in Hebrew, which was something about that was very comforting. And the Jewish mothers would come out on the porch and say, "Don't walk in the street, get out of the street." And we'd get out of the street until we got out of their sight. And then we'd get back in the street. I don't know why we walked in the street in the first place. But I remember being very respectful of, you know, every adult.
Did she tell you not to walk in the street just because you guys were like a bunch of children, or was it just like a discriminatory thing?
Oh, I don't think it was discriminatory at all, because we were walking in, our groups were mixed groups.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you had Jewish friends?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yes. I dated Jewish boys until I went to college, because that's all there was available. Yes.
So, could you you, I know you commented that you really enjoyed your school, your middle or elementary. Then you went on to which middle school?
Empire.
And could you comment and share any stories from Empire?
Oh, I thought that was the best school in the world. I loved it, and I loved my teachers. I was always a good student. I loved my teachers, and I know that at some point, my friends and I wanted to have a Y teen club that was affiliated with the Y, but we had a lot of Jewish teachers, and nobody was interested in doing it. But I talked a teacher into being our sponsor, Eleanor Eckhouse, and it was great. We did all kinds of things. It was a wonderful experience. It was a wonderful experience because our teachers, our schools were very integrated, including the staff.
So you had African American teachers and advisors?
Yeah, well, a couple, yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So what was the YMCA, where was the YMCA located?
It was on St. Clair. Near 105th and St. Clair, but on St. Clair at that time.
Was it, did it have like a pool and like the
YMCA? No, it was just like the upper floor of a building. It didn't have any of the amenities that you associate with the Y. Just clubs and stuff like that, stuff you could do after school. YW.
Oh, it was called YW?
Yeah, that's where the Y teen clubs were.
Okay.
Those were teen girls clubs.
What's the difference between YW and the YMCA? Could you explain that transition?
At that time, there may not be much difference. The YW was always much more liberal, and it catered to women and girls, the YM to men and boys. Young Men's Christian Association and Young Women's Christian Association. At that time, there was only, the YMCA only had male staff, and the YW had female staff. It's very different today.
Now that you say that, I remember there's a YWCA on the near east side. I want to say it's like near 55th and Prospect or something like that.
No, I'm not. I grew up and worked for the YWCA, but I worked in the Heights.
Right.
So I don't, and downtown then, but I'm not familiar where the Ys are now because they've changed so much.
I'm sure. Did you ever go downtown though as a child?
Oh, yes. Yes, downtown. We went downtown for lunch, downtown to Higbee's, to Halley's, to plays. Yeah. Went to the Playhouse. The Playhouse wasn't where it is now or where it was a few years ago. It was a different building, children's theater. They had children's theater, too. The Playhouse did. And that was, Severance Hall. Oh, stuff. Well, it wasn't. It likes things like Winnie the Pooh and just children's plays, stuff like that.
And would your mother take you guys?
My mother or my aunt, my mother's sister.
So she lived near your mother's sister.
My mother had two sisters. She lived on North Boulevard in the Glenville area. And she didn't have any children, so she was. Well, I was the first girl in the family, so I got a lot of perks that my sister didn't get. And we're very different, so different. My sister was always a tomboy. I was always a girly girl. So she wasn't interested. We were not interested in the same things.
My understanding is that there were, I guess you could maybe say alternative places where black families, African American families would go to, because there were certain places where they were discriminatory, there were segregated places, and so they're kind of like considered black alternative places. For example, Playmore is kind of a black mm-hmm. alternative. Could you kind of comment or share with me any places where it was, you know, when you look around, it was mostly blacks, and then places where, you know, you guys maybe weren't permitted to go or that you didn't go to? Or
outside of church, I can't. Because we were... I guess we were in a certain class of blacks, and I think that we felt less discrimination because we had access to some of the same things that whites had access to.
I understand.
You know, I was in the first black debutante's cotillion in Cleveland, and because two of the black sororities in Cleveland decided that that's what they wanted to do, was give young black women the same experience that white women had as at coming out. So, the things like that.
What was it that you said it was called?
Debutante's Cotillion.
What is that?
That's a coming out party in the black culture, when you're like 16 and you're old enough to date. Then you have, it's a maybe about 50 girls from all over Cleveland were involved. And you wear white gowns. And you're introduced to society.
I've never heard of this.
You never heard of cotillions?
No. I don't.
Oh, well, they have them. It's a coming out party. Usually in the white culture, they do them after college graduation.
Okay.
At 21, 22, something like that.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm familiar with the quinceañera.
When you're in the Latino mm-hmm. community, yes.
Okay. So did you do this when you turned 16?
No, the debutante's cotillion. Yes. That's. At the public auditorium.
Where's that?
Downtown.
I'll have to research that a little
bit. Yeah, yeah.
That's okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Did you go to high school then?
Glenville.
Okay, and were there still a lot of Jewish students?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you have any fond memories from Glenville High?
Yeah, we still get together. It was a small class, only like 52 in the class. So those of us who are left, we still get together.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So a class of 52. That's not
a big class at all. Nope. Our graduation was in the Glenville Auditorium. We didn't have to rent a place or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you say that you said it was integrated, so would mm-hmm. you say like 50-50, or would you say as far as Jewish, and I understand there's an Italian population that was somewhat close over there.
There might have been. There were a few Catholic kids. Ooh, let's see. I wouldn't say 50-50. Maybe 60-40 or something like that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys had a good time. And,
mm-hmm. John Adams and what else? Who else? Let's see. John Hay was almost all girls' school. So that's the only other school I can think of. Glenville, John Adams. No, just.
Did you have friends that went to other schools, nearby schools?
Not many.
No.
Mm-mm.
Year did you graduate high school?
54.
Did you go to college?
Not right away. I got married.
Oh, you did? Mm-hmm. How did you meet your husband, or where did you?
Kent State.
Okay.
I used to go down to visit friends at Kent State, and he was a student at Kent State.
What was he studying?
Pre-dentistry. Mm-hmm.
What were you still working for your uncle in the office?
No.
Did you work when you graduated?
Yes. Where did I work? Let me see. I worked at University Hospitals. Yeah.
What did you do there?
Worked in the kitchen. I don't remember the title.
Sure. Was in the University Hospital on like 100th and...
Yeah, it's still the same place.
Do you remember did you kind of get to watch any portion of that evolution of the Cleveland Clinic or right next door?
Let me see, when you talk about evolution, the Cleveland Clinic was not a popular place in the black community. It was one frame building, not even a brick building, a little frame building that had an emergency room, but they did not allow, they would say they did not have an emergency room if anybody black went there. It was very, very discriminatory, and that's the way most people of my era remember it. And it, like I said, it wasn't the Cleveland Clinic it is today.
Wow, I didn't know that. Do you remember anybody that you knew going there and being turned away?
No.
Was it just kind of an unspoken...
It was a kind of an unspoken thing.
Wow. So did you move down to Kent to be with your husband, or did you...
No. He moved here. Then we were only married. We were only married 4 years.
Okay.
And then I went back to school.
Where did you go to school?
Kent.
You went to Kent.
Yes.
What did you study there?
Social work. Social.
Did you make a lot of good friends at Kent?
Yes. I started out going into elementary ed, which was a special program for honor students. That was a 3-year program. But I had 2 babies by then, and I decided that is not what I wanted to do. So I switched to social work.
What years did you have your kids?
56 and 57.
And did you have been, what are their, boy
and girl? Or? Mm-mm, 2
girls. So what year did you graduate from Kent State then, what, with a degree in social work?
I didn't graduate when I was in my 3rd year, which was a 3-year program. The YW snagged me for a job. So what I did is they paid for the rest of my education, but that was through Case Western Reserve special programs that they did for the YWCA.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So then does that mean that you graduated from Case Western?
No, that meant I didn't get credit for those classes, but I was able to take those classes.
Okay, I see.
And then later on I got one of 50 people in the state of Ohio who got a grant for Case Western Reserve, a special studies grant there for communications. So that was for 16 hours. So things like that.
Mm-hmm. And where were you living at this time that you were with the YW? And
here.
In Cleveland Heights. When did you first move to Cleveland Heights?
64.
Where did you move to?
Here.
This house? Who did you buy this house from, or did you build it?
No, we bought this house from a French couple.
A French couple?
The Antines.
Where were they moving to?
They were moving in this, they were staying in the community. It was in a smaller house because they both had heart problems and they didn't want 2 floors. They wanted a 1 floor plan.
Did you go through a real estate agent or did you?
I don't remember which ones, but I remember that they didn't want us to buy this house. He told us to look in Shaker Heights at Cleveland. But the Antines said, no, we're keeping this house until you get it because we want you to have it with your family. By then, I was married the second time.
Okay.
And so, and they kept it until we got it.
Why did they want you to have it over somebody else?
Because they said it was a house for children. And I had, by then my husband came into the marriage with one adopted child, and then we had two children. So they just wanted, they fell in love with the children, really. Mm-hmm.
When you said that they didn't want you to buy this house, was it that the real estate was steering, or the real estate agent was steering?
Yes, yes, uh-huh, and the banks. Yeah, so.
Were they, the banks, specific in which
would say, you know, well, we can't give you loan, but if you look in Shaker Heights, find something in Shaker Heights. Mm-hmm.
And the real estate agent, did they show you homes?
Well, the real estate agent said, oh, we'll get this home for you, but it'll cost you $2,500 more than they're asking for it. And we talked to the Antines, and they said, no, they're not going to pay any more for it, and no real estate agent is going to buy it. We'll just hold on to it until you can get it. And they did.
How did you meet the Antines? Did you meet them?
Through a real estate agent.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where did you meet? Did you meet here?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they just fell in love with your kids?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Did you stay in touch with the Antines?
Yes, until they both passed away. Yes, we did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they wanted to come back and see what we were doing to the house and stuff like that.
Did they get to see the purple?
Yeah, no, it wasn't purple then. But they could see what we were doing to the inside. Because they had black and pink towels all over downstairs. Because she was allergic to carpet or, you know, so it was kind of hideous. So she would come back and see what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea what they were doing here from France?
Well, I think they had been here. I don't think that, you know, I don't, they had been here for a long time. They were probably second or third generation here.
Okay,
yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So were you one of the first black families to live
on
the street?
When we were one of the first black families in Cleveland Heights. When we moved into Cleveland Heights, there was less than 1% minority population. And that's all minority, including, you know, the Asians and East Indians. There were less than 1% of us.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know or have any other African-American family friends that were living in this area?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Why did you guys choose Cleveland Heights?
Well, for the school system, number one. And for the housing stock. We love the housing stock, the older homes, much older than Shaker Heights. We love the potential that the houses had. You know, we had friends on one street. They lived on a street. And honestly, every time we'd go to visit them, we'd go to the wrong house because they all looked alike. So we didn't want that. So, but we loved the neighborhood, the mixing of housing, all kinds of housing.
Where were you guys? Was Zagara's Market still just right up here?
It wasn't there. No. Zagara's wasn't there at all.
I'm trying to think of what year that was built.
Oh, Zagaro's, that was built, not that long ago. Let's see. I was in Boston.
Well, that one I know is new, but was...
Yeah, but there was one further up the street in a building where a furniture store is now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys do any shopping down in Cleveland Heights when you first got here?
Yeah.
And it was 64, you said?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Where were, like, the local stores or what?
Well, one of the things... That we learned, when we came, we were in Shaker. That's where we lived before we moved to Cleveland Heights. And, of course, on Sundays, all the stores were closed then. The blue laws were in effect. And we moved to Cleveland Heights, and because there were a lot of basically a Jewish community again, on Sunday stores were open. And my husband went to the store on a Sunday evening, and he was just really dumbfounded because the guy said, "Oh, why don't you shop in your own neighborhood?" And he said, "This is my neighborhood." And he said, "Oh, you must be the Allens who live over on Lee Road." They knew everything there was to know about us. That was very unsettling. And so my husband came home and told us, but told me, but it was, yes, everybody knew right away where we lived and who we were.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You said you lived in Shaker Heights before? Mm-hmm. Where did you live in Shaker Heights?
On Sutton Road.
Okay.
It's Sutton Place now. They think it's a cul-de-sac, I think, now.
Mm-hmm. And we were just looking to leave because?
Because we wanted to buy our own house.
Yeah.
We rented.
Okay, you rented in Shaker Heights. And was Shaker Heights, would you say, a more concentrated black population at that time in the 60s, or was it just beginning to?
No, it was very much like Cleveland Heights.
Okay.
Just begin. Mm-hmm.
Did you guys, were you one of the first black families in Shaker Heights then as well?
Oh, probably. Well, I don't know. On our street we were, but not, but it was a small street, but I don't know.
Did you ever run into any other instances like your husband had where, you know, you were kind of unsettled and taken back that people knew something?
Yes. Well, we were unsettled when we moved into this house. We were not greeted cordially. We were, smoke bombs were thrown on the porch, garbage in the front yard. The kids were terrorized when they went to the pool. Yes, our children were stopped for any reason that the police thought they could stop them. What are you doing in the neighborhood? Kids' daughter was stopped at the corner of Mayfield and Lee by a park policeman. There's no park at the corner of Mayfield and Lee, that kind of thing. So as a result, we formed a black parents group so we could teach our children how to handle being stopped and the information they should glean when they were stopped, who they should tell, that, you know, and that kind of thing.
And now, was this committee of black parents, is that the CICR, the Committee to Improve Community Relations?
Mm-hmm.
When did that form?
1970.
And how many other parents would you say about, did you guys?
Well, it grew to like 300.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Where did you guys meet?
At Heights United Presbyterian Church.
Mm-hmm. Was that a, what did many of the black residents of Cleveland Heights go to that church?
Mm-mm. No. No, there were only like maybe three families there, black families there, but it was a church that always made itself accessible and open to the community. So we eventually started going there, but at that time, the minister was very, very active in the community. And somebody asked if we could meet there, and he said yes.
So it was about 300 of you that met?
It was not in the beginning. Not in the beginning, but as people moved in and people had problems, that it grew. Mm-hmm.
Did the children ever attend these meetings? Or because I know you said that you were, you know, talking about what to tell your kids when you were stopped.
The children did not attend the meetings, but we did. Yes, we agreed on how we would deal with our children, and we set up a plan so that when anything was going on at the school, we notified all the schools to get in touch with us, that we could have 10 black fathers at any given place in 10 minutes.
Wow.
And that's what we did. It did, but everybody was, it was really, it was community.
Yeah.
community.
Did you guys ever have one instance that kind of set it off, that you said, okay, this is it, we're going to get a committee together? Did one certain thing happen, or was it just, you know, the continuation of just everybody's kids were getting stopped?
Well, it was that everybody's kids were being stopped. That was a big discussion in the committee, and the kids were frightened, especially the boys, because they were being stopped much more often than the girls. That was a talk in the community among the black parents and with some of the white parents. We talked about, you know, that it's being stopped, and that was it. Was really formed to protect our children, to teach them the information that they needed to get when they were stopped, mm-hmm. And then the parents, the group would handle it from there.
Was the police, or right? I don't want to say the police aware of the CICR, but you know, were they kind of taking note that, you know, they're catching on, that we are stopping all of the black kids?
They were very aware, because we met with the police chief, the chief of police, and with some of the officers. And, of course, when we had complaints against them, we had a badge number, a car number, a time of day, the date and everything. That's what the children were taught to get, that information, not to be confrontational at all. But so if there was a specific complaint, then we had specific information to deal with that complaint.
That's it's really proactive. I just couldn't imagine telling, you know, like a 7-year-old, get the badge number, get the plate number.
But you do what you have to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did your daughters ever take? And then I'm sorry, you said you had two daughters of your own, and then your husband had an adopted.
And son.
Okay.
We have three daughters and two sons.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Did they ever have to write down badge numbers?
Oh, yes, of course. Of course. There were incidents. Well, I was working at the Y by then, and one of the incidents, well, the incident that started CICR was in 1970 when I was working at the Y, and there were like, by that time, there were like maybe five black children who came to the Y. And these white guys came in camouflages with swastikas, with metal poles and baseball bats, and said, you know, you're not taking over our Y, that kind of thing. So we had to call the police. Now, police came and calmed everybody down. But what they did, they got everybody's story. They gave the guys back their bats and their metal poles. And when I objected to that, they said, for all you knew, they were going to play baseball. So that was the beginning of CICR right then. We met it at a person's house down the street on Lee Road and started it, because we knew that if it had not been for volunteers that I had working at the Y with me at that time, we don't know how it would have escalated.
Mm-hmm. I can't believe that.
Yeah.
You were a social worker at the Heights YMCA, mm-hmm. Correct?
Youth program director.
Okay.
Mm-hmm, for 10 years.
Wow. What years did you, was it from 70?
From 65 to 75.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the CICR was kind of like right in the middle of your career at the YMCA.
Yeah.
Did you develop any programs other than the committee to improve community relations? Did you develop any programs that were maybe focused on integrating the kids and youth-based?
All the programs I did were youth-based, because I was youth program director.
Right.
So, yes. So, and all the groups that we had, about 15 teen groups, mm-hmm. and three groups for the children who were mentally and emotionally and physically challenged, but all the groups were integrated. They were all girls. I think at some point the girls wanted to have a co-ed group, and so we called in their parents, and their parents said, fine, let them have the co-ed group. And then when the parents got home, they called me and said, no, don't let them. I said, no, you said in front of them they could have it, unless you want to come back and retract it in front of them, they got their co-ed group. So, and that's the way it was.
I know that you have kind of a not so fond memory of the YMCA with the men and the swastikas entering, but do you have any stories that you'd like to share about the YMCA?
They don't, the YMCA didn't have anything to do with that. At that time, the YMCA owned the building and it rented space to the YWCA, and we had totally separate programs from the YMCA. So, I'm fine with them because they had no control over me and my programming, because that was strictly with the YWCA.
So the men with the swastikas, they entered...
They had nothing to do with the YMCA.
Right.
These were just kids... Big kids.
Right, but did they enter into the YMCA or the YW?
No. There was one entrance.
Okay.
One entrance, one building, okay. Just separate programs.
Okay.
So, yes, yes.
Okay, sorry.
That's okay. That's okay.
Do you know where these kids came from or how old they were?
No, because they gave them back everything and let them go. You know, in 1972, they had a race riot at Heights High School. They said it was outside white kids who came in. And my son got hit with tire chains, and the police arrested him. They took him and passed his house and took him to jail and said that they didn't want him to get in trouble because he was so angry. So they locked him up. And our question was, they knew where I lived. Why did they pass our house to take him instead of just bringing him home? And then, let's see, I don't know what year it was that my daughter, our middle daughter, was held on the steps of Roosevelt with the guy with the screwdriver at her neck. And we prosecuted, and the judge dismissed it. So that was the not only, but you know, I can say that through all these things, there was always a white population who was very supportive of us.
And I think that's, I don't want to use the word unique to Cleveland Heights, but that is something that they have the Heights Community Congress and things like that. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Keeping a good balance.
Mm-hmm. And when we had, when we first moved in, they had a group called Human Rights. Heights Citizens for Human Rights. Yes, they came to this house and stayed all night. Said, move your kids in the back bedrooms, and they set up the windows and watched for them to come up the hill and throw smoke bombs and whatever, stink bombs, whatever they were, that kind of thing. So there always there was, a significant population who supported us.
The people that were throwing stink bombs, were they kids or were they adults, or did you just never really find out?
We never found out who it really was. Mm-mm.
Was there ever a moment in time where you recognized that it was not like that anymore, that you guys were welcome in the community? And I mean, other than the Heights Citizens for Human Rights obviously being very supportive, but, you know, when did that kind of fizzle? When did that stop happening?
Well, you know, it stopped happening for us, but there was still some prevalent incidents within the community. There was a person who moved here who was gone. Hill was his name. I can't think of his first name. Moved here to run Caramu House. Do you know what Caramu House is?
I just...
It's probably the oldest black theater house in United States. It was founded by the Jollifs, Rowena and her husband. I can't think of his name, Jollif. But it was to teach arts to the black community and bring black plays and black playwrights and things here. Well, he moved into Cleveland Heights because they had hired him to run Caramel, and his house was bombed. And he said, you know, I'm not going anywhere. You know, I'm here to stay. Well, they bombed his house a second time. And the bomb was so intense that it blew the keys off of their baby grand. And that's when they left. And there were other people who experienced bombings. So we got off easy as far as, you know. And so, but things like that happen periodically.
K-A-R-A-M-U.
Caramel House.
Okay. I'm
going to have to look that
up. Yeah. And what did you say his name was?
Hill. I don't remember his first name. They had brought him here from out of town. His last name was Hill. I just don't remember his first name because I don't think he really ever took the job because I think that he decided to leave before... You know.
What, do you remember, like, what year this was?
No, I don't. No, I don't.
Was it while you lived here, though, obviously? It was.
Yeah, and I was still working for the Y.
Okay, so sometime mm-hmm. between 65
mm-hmm.
and 75.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I did know that there were a series of bombings
mm-hmm.
in the Cleveland Heights area for mm-hmm. families that,
Yes.
I listened to another interview of a woman who, in fact, was afraid to even, like, be by her front window for the fear that somebody would throw something in the front
mm-hmm.
window,
mm-hmm.
which is obviously no way to live.
Yes, that's right.
It's very unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
But after you worked at the YMCA...
YW.
I'm sorry, the YWCA.
That's
I'm not going to stop saying it. I don't know why.
I know.
It's just...
I know.
The YWCA is not as well-known, and I'm a woman, so I should know that.
Yes.
I'm sorry. After worked for the YWCA in 75, is that when you worked for Sarah Hunter, Judge Sarah
mm-hmm,
Hunter?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You were bailiff.
Yes, she was... I was the first black professional staff person to be hired by the YWCA in a suburb. And I was the first black bailiff anywhere, black female bailiff anywhere. But Sarah was on the board of the YWCA. So she knew me from working for the YWCA, and I had just quit when she was going to run. So she asked me if I would work in her campaign.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Did you enjoy doing that? Was
yeah.
that a challenge, or what
mm-hmm.
was that like?
Yeah, it was fun. She thought that I knew everybody, and she said, schedule her to be speaking at different places and mm-hmm. things. That's what, but after that, I was a campaign manager for somebody, a campaign treasurer. Mm-hmm. I like politics a lot. Mm-hmm.
So you were definitely able to be involved in that. I did mm-hmm. read her obituary online, the
mm-hmm.
News Herald, and it did mention that it said Hunter hired a white woman as clerk and a
mm-hmm.
black woman as bailiff, which
mm-hmm.
was so unheard
yeah.
of at the time.
Well, the thing about it is that we had an all women's court, which was totally unheard of because usually a bailiff was always a male. So it was very, all our clerks and all our bailiff and deputy bailiffs, everybody was a woman. So that was nice.
Mm-hmm.
Different.
Yeah. And I also read that she was married to a black man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she was, you know, very, you know, she, I don't want to say that she, how do I put this? You know, if anybody was, like, you know, surprised by that, she was very defensive. And,
mm-hmm.
So did you ever meet her husband?
Oh, gosh.
Is he still living?
No, he died before she died. No. Oh, yeah, we did. We did. We were kind of isolated, so we did a lot of things together. Yes. Yes, Joe. He was a, he was head of the Ohio Civil Rights Commission for a number of years.
Were you ever involved in that? Or?
Mm-mm. No. No. Mm-mm. I was involved in lots of things, but not that.
Were you ever involved in a Heights Citizens for Human Rights? Or?
No, no.
They just came here.
They had formed before my time. I can tell you my husband was, though.
Okay.
We were involved in everything, but we were never involved in the same thing together. He did one thing and I did the other. So he was treasurer for 7 years.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell me a little bit about, I guess, what was happening in those 7 years that he was treasurer? For what years that was?
Oh, I don't remember what years.
Was it while you were working for the YWCA?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When did the, or is the, I don't even think I know if the CICR is still around, or when did
no,
that?
No, no. It's not still around. Oh, gosh. I'm not sure when it ended. You have to, Susie probably has that information.
Yeah,
because
sure
she got a lot of the documents and papers, the incorporation papers and all that.
Oh, yeah, she's
mm-hmm.
got it all. She's very,
so she would know that, yes.
She's very well informed on mm-hmm. all of these types of things. Well, we are at an hour, so I guess my last question for you would just to be share any stories that you have of Cleveland Heights that kind of stand out in your memory. Obviously, I mean, the smoke bombs in your front yard is very memorable, and you said that your daughter was held up with
a screwdriver.
And could you maybe elaborate? I'm just interested to know. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, this was a guy who's 21 years old who was upset with her parents because we were very vocal. So what he said to her was, go home and tell your mom and your dad to shut up. That was it. But of course, she didn't know it was a screwdriver. She thought it was a knife. And, well, within 3 or 4 hours, we knew exactly who he was, where he lived, and the cops could pick him up. That's how supportive the community was. I think my most memorable thing about Cleveland Heights is the thing I hold. Well, is the friendships that came out of it, the community, the friendships that I still have, the friendships that my children have. Those are very important to them.
Where did they go to school?
Heights.
Public
Heights.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that race riot in 72, and I'm trying to think if your youngest was. Or your oldest
no.
was born in
15? No, I think he was a senior. He was a senior.
Okay.
It was in January or February when the riot happened. Mm-hmm. And I think he graduated that June. Mm-hmm.
Wow. On a brighter note, do you ever go to the home and garden tours or anything like that around Cleveland Heights?
I go to everything.
Yeah.
I go to the art festival. I go to the Coventry Fair. I go to the Heights Community Congress's tour of homes. Yes.
You do it all.
Mm-hmm. I try.
Do you go to Kane Park a lot for
yes.
concerts?
Yes, I just went last week.
Did you? Who is there?
I went to see Inlet, the dance company.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yes.
I know that Michael McDonald's going to be there.
Yes.
Soon.
And I went to the art exhibit because I had bought that piece of art online.
Okay.
And the artist was at Kane Park. He doesn't live here. And it wasn't signed, so I took it so he could sign it.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah.
Signed it.
Yes, yes.
Nice. That's wonderful.
So, yeah. So.
I think who was there at Kane Park that I wanted to see? I don't remember. It's like a jazz band or something.
Okay.
But they always have something.
Yeah. Oh, they do. They do.
Do you ever go back to Glenville for any kind of
Mm-hmm, of course. My sister.
Your sister's parents.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And she still lives in the same house.
Mm-hmm. She lives in the house we grew up in.
And the neighborhood is very different.
The neighborhood is very different, but it's quite stable. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the house looks good, inside and out.
Yeah.
Yes.
How old would the house be then?
Ooh, it's over 100 years old.
Oh. Mm-hmm. How old is this house, do you know?
Yes, 1910.
Okay, so this house is over 100 years old as well.
Mm-hmm.
104, just about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know Glenville has a community picnic or something
like that going on.
And they're having Houdini there, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a picnic person. Never have been.
Oh, okay.
Bugs and stuff like
that.
That's
right. You're the girly girl. So maybe that's she
right.
Would be
yes,
in that.
That's right. That's right. When it was time for her to be a debutante, she said, "I'm not having it."
Really?
Right. Yes. I'm not putting on a gown. I'm not doing that.
That's
yes.
Funny.
Yes. Right. Yes.
That sounds kind of like my younger sister.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Exactly.
Oh yes.
Well, anyways. Thank you so much.
Oh,
for
you're
meeting
more
with me.
Than
it was
welcome.
Such a pleasure. And to hear all of your stories, though some were a little unfortunate, but some
yeah,
are good.
Well, we grow from those things.
Yeah. And
mm-hmm.
It sounds, and you're still very much active in the
yes.
community in the Heights as well.
I love it. I love it. I love the community. And my daughter lives in Shaker. But she says it's not the same as Cleveland Heights. It doesn't have the culture. It doesn't have the restaurants. It doesn't have this. She said, you know. He said, "I like Shaker." She said, "But it's not the same as Cleveland Heights."
Do you? What was I going to ask? Oh, what is your favorite restaurant? Just out of curiosity, around here.
Nighttown. Because Nighttown was born the same year we moved in. No, the year after it was born, in 1965, mm-hmm. And we thought it was our private club. When we saw strangers, and I have a friend, she lived in Cleveland for a long time. She lives in New England now, but she comes twice a year, and we always go to Nighttown because that's where we used to meet after work. And she says, the same people are sitting on the same bar stools, only they are 100 years older. She said, everybody claimed a bar stool. It is funny, yes, but I love Nighttown. I always see somebody there that I know. I know all the waiters. I know the owner, so that's my... And the food is consistently good. I've never had a bad meal there.
And they play good music there, too.
Yes, they do. Yes.
I have to get over there.
Yeah. Yeah, the Sarah's son, the judge's son, plays there quite often. He's a musician.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Do you keep in touch with?
Oh, yes. I see them all the time. Mm-hmm.
They're Heights residents.
Yes. As a matter of fact, Amanda, her daughter, and her husband, they live in Sarah's house, her old house.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And Joey and his wife, they just live up the street on Hyde Park.
Okay. Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Going up here.
Oh, yeah.
You know everybody. And you go
I love it. I do.
There's so much to do over here.
Yeah. There is. Yes. And there's so many good people. I really do. I love it.
I just saw there's an arts fest on the 11th. Mm-hmm. Sunday the 11th or something.
Mm-hmm.
I might have to come check that out.
Where?
I saw it advertised right on Cedar Hill.
Oh, okay.
So
oh, they usually have a Cedar Fairmount Festival. Up in that little area, so that's probably, yeah.
And the next weekend is the Feast of Assumption.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, gosh.
Somebody will have to take me in a wheelbarrow to that.
Yeah, I know it. They have such good food.
Yeah.
Well, everything. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
But I love the culture and the different celebrations. That is so rich.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yes.
And unique to Cleveland Heights because
yes.
The West Side is not...
Mm-hmm.
In fact, did you ever go to the West Side for anything when you lived over here in Cleveland Heights?
We went for the West Side. They have a tour of homes every year.
Okay.
So we'd go over for that. And, of course, we'd gone over to restaurants and to some shops for shopping.
Mm-hmm. Some, you know, there's the whole...
The banyan tree?
Yeah, Tremont.
Yeah, Tremont, well, that's... I've been in there to shop because somebody told me they had really cute things, so...
Mm-hmm. I've been there, too.
It's okay.
Pretty cute over there. Mm-hmm. They've got a lot of really nice restaurants in Tremont.
Yes, I know. I always see the chefs advertised, mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
The one, Michael Simon.
Yeah, Michael Simon.
Mm-hmm. He has Lolita over there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Lola downtown.
Right, right. I think, yeah, because I haven't been to Lolita, but I've been to Lola's downtown. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How lucky are we to have such a... Yes,
you're not kidding. You are so right. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, before I get hungry...
Yeah, right.
Anyways, thank you again so much.
No, you're more than welcome. You're more than welcome.
For allowing me into your home.
Certainly.